Good morning once again. This is Jim Santel. You're here with me in the studio, as is Connor, my producer. This is Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. We're actually eating cannolis this morning in the studio in the midst of a very serious discussion. We were just finishing up some retread, if you will, some reconsideration of a few things we chatted about last week in connection with this very significant guns case that's going to be decided by the Supreme Court quite soon in Bruin, B-R-U-E-N, whether or not we have a constitutional right to carry weapons, open carry, concealed carry, in the streets and sidewalks, perhaps other places of America. And throughout the morning on every single program coming up, we'll take callers on here at WAUK, 540 AM, 101 FM at the Shaw in Waukesha. And one of those callers is Mark. Mark, you've been waiting on the line patiently for the first half an hour or so. Glad to have you with us again, Mark, today. And your comments or questions, thoughts or perspectives to share with us this morning.
Oh, thanks for taking my call, Jim. It's great to talk to you again. It is amazing to me that the Alito's likely decision on some of the stuff on the whole privacy issue, and tie that into this, I mean, that they're going to probably expand rights to carry weapons wherever the hell we want to, yet they feel perfectly fine with restricting, women's rights to bodily autonomy and ignoring, the rights, privacy rights that have been established over the past, 40-some years, and they talk about direct enumeration in the Constitution, and that, of course, under the Ninth Amendment, it says that just because rights are new, just because we've mentioned some rights, and it's not to construe that we've enumerated, that people have certain, rights. I mean, they just have these rights, and they don't need to be enumerated. I mean, that
exactly.
The whole enumeration issue, right, in the Constitution is something that, Hamilton Madison addressed in 1944, saying they didn't enumerate everything in the Constitution. Government might be called upon to promote the general welfare of the people, because that is enumerated, that part of the job of our government is to promote the general welfare. And part of that general welfare may actually be to restrict the carrying of firearms wherever the hell we want to carry firearms, because I'm not going to feel comfortable. I'm a hunter and I'm a gun owner, and I would not feel comfortable walking around and seeing everybody and their brother wearing something strapped to their side, or potentially having something concealed on them. That is just something we got away from. I mean, we hear about the days of the old Wild West, and the way that some of those marshals cleaned up the towns is by when you come into town, you turn your weapons into the marshal's office,
right,
and you can pick them up when you go back out on the trail.
Right. And Mark, I thank you so much for those observations, not only because they fall right in line with our discussion this morning and previously, which you were also a part of, but to underscore your point, yes, Ninth Amendment, lots of things reserved to the states, reserved to the people, not the Constitution, but going back to the very first words in the Constitution, right, we the people, to do what? To form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. That's the reason why we have a Constitution. And Mark, I thank you so much again for the observations this morning and the very on-point views about what could and could not happen here in America coming up. And it's also the perfect segue, Mark, thanks so much for that, into our much-related discussion this morning for the remainder of our time together here, Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel, talking about this, not directly related, but certainly in the same vein, Mark, as you just said, Supreme Court addressing once again issues that have been the subject of controversial opinions in the past. This is the one that obviously many, many people are chatting about. We're talking once again about the case in Dobbs, D-O-B-B-S, and that's the word you need to think about, the language, that's the name of the Supreme Court case that will also, like Bruin, be decided sometime, probably in the next few weeks or so, almost certainly by next month at this time, if not sooner. I'm going to talk, as Mark just introduced us all, to the notion of privacy rights, because that's where this comes from. That's where Roe versus Wade comes from. Roe versus Wade did not spring completely from the pen of Harry Blackmun in 1973. It was followed a long, long a litany, if you will, of cases. And I want to spend a little bit of time in the remaining periods of this hour talking about privacy rights, where we get to Roe versus Wade, and then chat about what's going on with the Supreme Court in connection with privacy rights, the implications of that, and what we might anticipate when Dobbs is issued, along with Bruin coming up fairly soon. And so I begin every program, every Saturday here, with a recitation of some of the major historical events in our nation and in our world. Here's your party question. You can entertain guests with this in the future. What two major events happened in American history on January 22, 1973? January 22nd, 1973. I will answer them for you now, and then you can use this to talk brightly, as you always do, with others in your family and group of friends. Two things happened of great import on January 2nd of 1973. One is that Lyndon Johnson, the 36th President of the United States of America, died. He was, as you know, the architect of the Great Society program, and I was on that day, January 22nd, 73, that we mourned his passing, and the all-important civil rights legislation, obviously, that he initiated during the course of his term that stays with us to this day, that moves us forward toward that time of a more perfect union that we anticipate under the Constitution. The other significant thing that happened on January 22nd of 1973 is that that was the day that the High Court, our United States Supreme Court, ruled in Roe versus Wade that, in fact, there is a constitutional right to abortion, specifically to make decisions about reproductive rights. We're going to get back to that in just a few moments as we chat more about what Roe versus Wade said and did not say. But let's step back even beyond what happened, before what happened on January 22nd, and talk about some of the predicates for that. We know way back in 1948, certainly privacy rights existed before then, but we know in 1948, in December of that year, the United Nations came out with a Declaration of Human Rights. It was Article 12, and said, "No one shall be subject to arbitrary interference with his," and I'd offer her, "privacy, family, home, correspondence, nor attacks upon his or her honor and reputation." Everyone, the United Nations said, has the right to the protection of the law against such interference or attacks on privacy. That was way back in 1948. Let's move actually before that to the 1920s and get into the United States Supreme Court in our nation, because it was way back in the 1920s that the United States Supreme Court began to articulate this notion that there is a privacy right. Again, the word privacy does not, as Mark and others have indicated this morning, does not appear expressly in the Constitution. But the Supreme Court began to identify back in the 1920s this notion that indeed, by virtue of all of the provisions of the Constitution, including the Bill of Rights, which we'll also get to, that there is a hint, if you will, of privacy rights. How do they do that? Well, there was a case called Meyer versus Nebraska way back in 1923. And in that case, the Supreme Court, beginning to talk about this notion that families and parents and people engaged in privacy interests should have a right to be learned, be educated broadly. And so the Supreme Court in 1923, Meyer versus Nebraska, said that a state law that prohibited, obviously Nebraska, from the teaching of German and other foreign languages before the ninth grade could not stand. Could not stand. You can't limit that kind of educational curriculum. And again, began to talk about this fundamental notion of privacy rights. About 2 years later, in a case called Pierce versus Society of Sisters, the United States Supreme Court also kind of revisited this issue, not explicitly, but said that it was unconstitutional for the Oregon legislature, moving a bit west now, the Oregon legislature, to mandate compelling all children to attend public schools. Again, a privacy right of families, of parents, of individuals, to make decisions about where students, their children, should go to school. Both Meyer and Pierce began to suggest that there is, in fact, this thing called privacy rights established under the Constitution, acknowledged by the Supreme Court. We move ahead just a few years to 1928, a case called Olmstead, O-L-M-S-T-E-A-D, 1928. The Supreme Court was wrestling at that time with the question of whether or not this newfangled thing called telephones could in fact be used for investigative purposes by law enforcement to record conversations. And in that particular case, the Supreme Court was deciding whether there was a privacy right in your telephone conversations, 1928 and before. Right after the break here, we're going to chat with you about what that means, what that case in Olmstead said, and why it began to put us in the direction of a clear establishment of privacy rights in America, not just in 1928, but to this day in 2022. We'll talk more about Olmstead, heading toward Roe versus Wade, heading toward Dobbs this morning on Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.